Do you love the American Constitution? We too. Please help letting this podcast survive in the current cancel culture. Amazon recently deleted our Peter Canceler collection, probably for being too cheap. It was Locke, Hobbes, and the US Constitution for only $15. Check out our Peter Canceler at Barnes & Noble, Lulu, or do a quick DuckDuckGo search to buy American collections that come at the lowest price possible to keep civil law great. That's PeterKanzler, featuring the original texts from Locke, Hobbes, Rousseau, the US Constitution, Machiavelli, and many more, always bound together in just one book. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think what we've done is we've unleashed a multipolar world where the U.S. is not capable of giving strong guidance. So what we're doing is we are now squandering what we built for decades in the post-World War II rearrangement. And we're going to be left probably with a multipolar world, which game theoretically is going to be almost impossible to control. I mean, the Cold War was weirdly stable because it was two-player. Mm-hmm. And it also fits beautifully with this very strange phenomenon that a lot of people who have always identified left or progressive or with the Democratic Party are finding themselves weirdly hanging out with people on the right. And I think, why is this? And so I thought about this situation like during the Inquisition in Spain where, you know, Turkey said, you know, Spain's problem with the Jews is Turkey's advantage. Welcome. And so in large measure, a lot of us have been treated much better on the right. And I believe that the right is actually softening and changing as a result of them taking in this influx of people who, you know, I've never voted Republican yet. I don't even think I'm on the fence necessarily. But I do know that I am treated respectfully, thoughtfully. People say, well, I'll disagree with you, Eric, on that. And then we find out that maybe we're not in so much disagreement. So the quality of the conversations on the right has become weirdly better than what I used to, you know, I often refer to as the thinking left. And it's watching the expulsion of one group and into territory traditionally held by another. And I do think we have to be really appreciative to our friends on the right for their decency. And at some point when the right, you know, starts chucking out people who dare to think for themselves, I hope to offer them a home when we've regained our own territory.
Yeah, and I love that because it does show the fluidity of all of this and the rhythm of all of this and the things that were right become left and the bounce and all that. But I think you hit something really interesting there, which is that I think you said they've been softening. And I've consistently seen that. So when I've sat across in this very room from people on the right, you know, the scary right, so Prager and Shapiro and Glenn Beck and all these other people, well, they know that I'm not only for gay marriage, but I'm gay married. They know that I'm pro-choice. They know that I'm for single-payer healthcare. They know that I'm for euthanasia and I'd like to reform prison systems and I'm not for nation building and all this other stuff. And I think by being human around them, just by being human, I'm not even talking about what we've done on air, but when I've hung out with some of them privately, I've seen them sort of ease up on some of these issues where people would, oh, they're all homophobes. And it's like, no, they're not. And if they were late to the party on gay marriage, I mean, look, Republicans don't really care about gay marriage anymore. They may not be thrilled about it, but Trump ran saying it's okay and it's gonna be all right and that's it. And that sort of softening of an ideology, I think we have to acknowledge that when it happens. Like, it's important for us to say, okay, we wanted something for a long time. We thought it was right for a long time. They waved the white flag on this one. Doesn't mean they've come around on everything else that I want them to come around on.
Well, you know, but sometimes they'll say, you know, I really object to a lot of what you say and it's offensive to my moral system, but I really like the way you presented it and I thought you were fair. You've given me food for thought. I don't think I'll change my mind, but thank you for stimulating me to think. Wow, I haven't heard anything like that from people I've disagreed with on the left for quite some time. And I don't know if I don't know what's causing it. I think part of it may be that they were in an invisible war that people couldn't see between these mainstream publications, and they would specifically address this issue and not that issue. Mm-hmm. And now, as the internet culture has broken this game open, maybe they don't feel quite as embattled, and they could choose to continue in the previous trajectory, but they're actually saying, no, you know, this pays a dividend. If you're not going to be so potent in hunting us and making us feel like pariahs.
That's really interesting, that they've been hunted for so long and mocked by mainstream for so long that now the internet caused a crack. People are really able to look at them a little bit differently, and they're showing a little humanity right now because they realize that there's an opportunity to be treated a little differently. It's self-preservation by them, but I'm fine with that. I believe in rational self-interest and self-preservation.
Right, and I think that, you know, shame on any one of us who doesn't accept a hand that's offered in the spirit of friendship and investigation of the truth. And I've had many hands offered to me. It doesn't mean I'm becoming them. I don't think that I've changed. But, you know, just as the point that I made to you earlier, once upon a time we had the party of Lincoln and the Dixiecrats. And, you know, even if all that's happening is that your end goals remain unchanged, what gets bound to those end goals? Like, for example, interracial marriage, where I'm in an interracial marriage, it used to be the Communist Party was the only party that would support that, right? And so now it's, you know, every party would support it.
Yeah.
But the point is that the labels and the bindings change, and I'm not going to be loyal, just to the insignia.
So is that the direct connection to their outrage, that they've owned the narrative for so long because of mainstream accepting and pushing these ideas, academia, media, politically what was okay to say and what isn't okay to say, that the internet came in, blew it apart, and now the reason that they're so hysterical is because they're finally under scrutiny.
They also got more desperate. So if you look at like affirmative action and the old, you know, decisions in the 1970s, you could make the claim that the world had been so unequal that maybe we needed to do something very radical, right? But you've now had these various corrective measures for so long that even if we haven't gotten rid of lots of structural problems, things have gotten a lot better on many more fronts. And I think if you look at something like, you know, the Southern Poverty Law Center, what does it choose to do when it runs through actual, you know, Klan meetings because there aren't enough Klansmen to watch? Okay, well, you know, now we have to find some growth industry. So let's find like some of the most enlightened, helpful people around, like, you know, Majid Nawaz, and we're going to go after him and paint a bullseye. Well, God damn you.
Yeah.
You're not going to do that silently. It's not cute. It's not funny. You're going to get people killed, and you clearly don't care.
Yeah. And thankfully, Majid is not taking it lying down. He's now preparing a legal defense against, or he may go on the offense with them. But they did it to Ayan. They did it to Brigitte Gabriel, who I've had on the show, who I was a little nervous about having her on the show because so many people say she's this right-wing, evil, you know, monster. I had her on the show. It was one of the most enjoyable hours I've ever had of the most decent person sitting across from me telling me their story and their humanity.
So let's make a point. Every time they tell us who we're not supposed to talk to, let's put that person towards the top of our list of people we should probably talk to.
Yeah.
We got to reverse this thing because they need to lose that toy, right? So they've been playing with
it too much.
Which camera can I look into?
You can look into that one right there.
Tucker Carlson, first of all, I haven't agreed with you very much over the years. Thank you so much for covering the story of Brett Weinstein. I really appreciate it. And, you know, it's not a question if I begrudgingly say this. I'm just wholeheartedly open in saying, you know, you did something that needed to be done, and it should have been done by everyone. It should have been done by the left, and we're not apologetic about it. We're not apologizing left, right, and center. You know, that was one of the huge things with Brett. When is he going to apologize? You watch, he's going to cave. Well, I've watched lots of people cave. I even watched Bill Maher cave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is completely crazy. And that pressure has been stood up to only on the right, so far as I know. So credit where it's due. Yeah. Let's stop being scared. And by the way, it doesn't mean that I'm not moving to the right in order to say this. I'm just recognizing good work where good work is done.
Yeah. Well, that's a perfect segue, actually, to another phrase that you came up with that I love, the intersectional shakedown. Uh-huh. So we've talked a lot about intersectionality here. I think most of my audience understands that. But this shakedown addition that you added, I think, has a really interesting component. It's sort of related to everything that happened to your brother.
I'm looking for an apology from you, and I'm looking for concessions. And what do I hold? I hold the ability to call you names. And if you don't do as I say, if you will not surrender your agency, surrender your individuality, take on this junior status, which I'm going to call ally. White people, get me some water. This is food for black people in case black people are hungry. No. What you're doing is you're basically just baiting everybody with the one tool you have, which is if you don't toe the line, we're going to call you names. It's going to limit your ability to move around the institutional universe.
So to be clear, this is really a critique of, in the case of Evergreen, this is a critique of the white students that were joining the fray, right? Because they were sort of, to prove how not racist they were doing very anti-liberal things. So the shakedown was to take these guys and control these students, right?
Absolutely. It's a protection racket where fundamentally you take the weakest people who are embarrassed about their own culture, they're embarrassed about their own hide, and look, everyone should look at their own ethnic group and see what it does well, see what it does poorly. Being self-critical is a virtue, not a vice. But self-hatred and self-flagellation and privileging the other as some sort of advanced life form, as if we can't, I mean, I do worry, for example, do these white kids have any black friends? Do they have any Muslim friends? Do they have friends who have immigrated from the developing world?
Right. Because you mean in reality, not in just, you know, if you were to look, it all looks diverse.
Yeah, everything. I mean people who you'd trust to make decisions for you in a hospital. Mm. Because let me tell you, the developing world thinks that the West would be crazy to give up on itself. Yes, it's got more entertaining dances or better food or some rich and storied history and great narratives and art. But the fact of the matter is that the West has probably more attraction for those people than any other place. Our amplifier is what distinguishes us. We have done everything more powerfully than every other group. And so it's not whether or not what we're doing is right or wrong, because every culture does right and wrong. But our amplifier is bigger. So, you know, if you plug in a Stratocaster to a huge stack built for a stadium and you make a mistake, I guarantee you, they're going to hear it three counties over. Right. On the other hand, if you play a fantastic solo, that's there too. And I don't understand, when did we give up on the West? I mean, this has been terrible, it's been wonderful, but it's the best thing we have going.
So Amira, if you could pull up the four quadrant image. So I really want to dive into this. The first time I heard about this, correct me if I'm wrong, was it the first time you had talked about it publicly, really, was on Sam's podcast?
It was.
Okay, so on Sam's Waking Up podcast, which I'm sure most of my audience probably listens to, you described this four quadrant method, really, for looking at the world. And there's a great video of it on YouTube, but we're going to have you re-explain it, and maybe you can do it a little better this time. We shall see. So we're looking at it on the screen so the audience can see it there. We've got copies in front of us so that, you know, we don't have to extend our eyes too much. Talk to me about the four quadrants, because this made a lot of sense to me, but I can't tell you that I understood every piece of it the first time you explained it.
Terrific. So it came out of a frustration with left versus right thinking, which I think we all share. We still use it because it's slightly useful, but it's getting worse and worse as an approximation all the time. And I think what I was trying to figure out is a particular dynamic that is being used over and over again that we fall for, just the way Charlie Brown never manages to kick the football from Lucy. And so the idea is that you've got a collection of people that I want to concentrate on as living in the quadrant labeled first principles thinkers and contrarians. Mm-hmm. Now, these are people who are thinking for themselves and are not buying baked cakes. They're buying the ingredients. And they're saying, well, I want more of this ingredient. I don't like that ingredient. So they're attempting to avoid having any pre-baked idea put in front of them. And what you see on the x-axis.
So we're in the upper left quadrant for those that are following along.
Right. Yeah. What you see on the x-axis is some visible support for a policy initiative? Are you for the DREAM Act? Do you believe in No Child Left Behind? Do you want the U.S. to accept more refugees? These are things that we can measure whether you're supporting or opposing a particular policy prescription. Now, on the vertical axis, what you have is some implied moral virtue or vice. So let's start with somebody like Brett.
Okay.
So Brett, I think, lives in the second quadrant. On the x-axis, I'm going to put support for the equity agenda advanced by his college. So he clearly opposed that.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, the I'm going to put absence of racism on the y-axis.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say Brett is a guy with like almost zero racism and completely opposed to this equity agenda sneak attack.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem is...
So he's sort of done one good, one bad there in traditional thinking.
In traditional thinking.
Yeah.
Now what they want to do is to say, ah, we can infer from your opposition to the equity agenda that your real Y value is extremely negative. That is, you are a racist. And you oppose these people because you singled out black females, strong black women who were trying to advance a good cause. And so that is the attempt to map from quadrant three, quadrant two, first principles, thinkers, contrarians, into quadrant three. And you see this line, actual position, perceived position.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they tried to do. They tried to create Brett the troglodyte, Brett the racist. And in fact, that narrative, which is you can tell how good or bad somebody is on racial or gender issues depending upon how much they go along with the agenda. And that is the media narrative. Mm-hmm. And that's what broke, right? Which is that the New York Times probably would say, look, this is part of identity politics. This is part of the Democratic Party. This is how we do things. We can't have people dining a la carte, buying ingredients. This is a baked cake. Take it or leave it. You are either support the initiative and you're virtuous on race, or you oppose it and you're a bastard.
Right, because right? Otherwise it's so contrary to everything else we put out there, it can't make it through the system.
Right. Now let's take somebody else. For example, let's take Sam Harris.
Okay.
So Sam Harris would normally live in quadrant two along with Brett. But here, for example...
Free thinkers.
Yeah. Sam might oppose opening our borders for refugees coming out of failed states, particularly with Muslim majority populations. You would like, if you were part of the control structure, to say, well, that could only be because you're an Islamophobe.
Mm-hmm.
But my guess is, and I got Sam to admit this on his podcast, he seems to be a bit of an Islamophile. He's aware of the poetry, he's aware of the music, he's aware of the culture, he's got very close friends and collaborators who are active practicing Muslims. And so the idea is that Sam is I think he's probably an Islamophilic guy who's worried about the same thing his Muslim friends are worried
about.
Just
what he needs, another label.
What?
Well, just what he needs.
But we're gonna drag him out.
Yeah.
Right? And so the key point is that the dupes
mm-hmm.
are the people who say, well, you know, I can infer what Sam is really up to. He just wants a first strike against Muslims in the Middle East. Well,
mm-hmm.
obviously he doesn't. That's stupid. Now, who's actually controlling this game? My claim is that it's these people in the fourth quadrant, which is rent-seeking elites. These are people who, for example, want to save a pension plan by increasing immigration because we're not reproducing and growth,
mm-hmm.
is at a low. And so they, for example, may have a very kind of mercenary, self-interested view of why they want a border opened. Okay,
so that's the elite level. Where would you put like the people that relentlessly slam and smear him for their own good?
Those are the dupes, right?
Yeah.
And so the dupe army
is
going to come after you relentlessly for breaking ranks and saying, I want to dine a la carte,
mm-hmm.
right? And so, for example, I don't see you as a Trump supporter. So if I did this, which would be like support for, how would I do you? So in this case, I might say Dave is somebody who is opposed to the mainstream news narrative.
Absolutely.
And we want to, but he is extremely intellectual and very analytical and trying to figure things out for himself. And we would like to say that he's actually slid right. So you'll see a ton of stuff. You know, Dave Rubin refuses to criticize X, Y, and Z. He's actually a right winger. He's not a liberal, blah, 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 nonsense.
Yeah.
Now, what is this? Again, they're angry at you for, in some sense, dining a la carte. And over again, it's one trick, which is we want to break out these long short positions, which is to say, you know, I'm long Microsoft and I'm short Yahoo, versus somebody else who says, no, you can only be long tech, or you have to be against tech. You can't actually have a view that one tech company is on the way up and one tech company is on the way down. And so I believe that this diagram, we all need to understand it, because what's happening is that we're being attacked individually. Each one of us has a custom one of these fitted to us as to what's wrong with us. What's wrong with Eric that he's ragging on the New York Times? I feel like journalism is so important.
Right.
Well, of course I feel like journalism would be important. Somebody should invent it. I just don't see much of it. Right? And so it's not against that. It's a point of saying, I hold a long, short, nuanced position, and what are you going to try to do? The easiest way to neutralize me is to try to map me to the troglodyte sector. And how are you going to do that? It's always the same game. We have the right to infer what you're really up to from some bit of observed behavior. Thank you very much. Your words mean nothing. The nuances are all lost. We've got your number. Next, please. Yeah. The only way that works is that some of us are still dependent on institutions. So the institutions are still playing that game. But here, and this was my point to you earlier, here we are in a non-network, right? We're in somebody's very professional studio, able to reach people so that I get recognized in airports and coffee shops. And the fact is we're out of control. And that's why they're coming for us now, is because they're starting to understand, well, what happens if Sam Harris and Dave Rubin and Eric Weinstein and Sargon Avakad and Lacey Green and you know, Philly D, all these people actually start saying, are you seeing the same craziness I am? Whether it's on demonetization, whether it's on Facebook, thankfully, making sure that that fake news is out of my feed. Well, what you're really going to start doing is filtering a bunch of stuff that isn't fake news.
Yeah.
It's just stuff that's off your narrative. Or Google is going to bury it in their algorithm. So it's going to be there, but it's going to be seven pages in. You'll never see it.
We got a lot of work to do.
Well, we've got two possible ways out, so far as I can see it, or we can just start up history in earnest and try to see whether we land safely. But I would certainly take either of the first two options, either de-Potemkinize the institutions or reboot from a ragtag collection of kids who look something like the Bad News Bears but might be able to get the job done.
I'm on the reboot side. The other one just simply doesn't seem possible to me, and I think the rebooting has begun. Now, we need a lot of allies, we need a lot of help, but I think the cavalry is coming.
Well, I'm here for the second time, and that should tell you something about how I'm voting. I wish we could do it the other way because it'd be easier,
but
there's no time to lose, and semi-reliable communal sense-making is the number one crisis. If we do not learn how to come up with a narrative that we can share, where we can have small differences, but everybody more or less agrees on the general facts without turning everything into a political contest, we're going to take the most hopeful and best experiment with all of its flaws, throw every bad thing that happened to the 20th century in, we're still better off not trashing this experiment and protecting it. And I'll come back anytime you want.
Do you love the American Constitution? We too. Please help letting this podcast survive in the current cancel culture. Amazon recently deleted our Peter Canceler collection, probably for being too cheap. It was Locke, Hobbes, and the US Constitution for only $15. Check out our Peter Canceler at Barnes & Noble, Lulu, or do a quick DuckDuckGo search to buy American collections that come at the lowest price possible to keep civil law great. That's PETERKANZLER. Featuring the original texts from Locke, Hobbes, Rousseau, the US Constitution, Machiavelli, and many more, always bound together in just one book. Thank you very much.